Welcome to the second hour's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Michael reading additional articles from the Midland Reporter-Telegram. This is the Business and Oil page, Friday, March 4th, 2022. Oil touches 14-year high before receding to $107, by Julia Fonzarez, Bloomberg. Oil fell on signs that high-stakes talks to revive a nuclear deal with Iran may soon conclude, potentially raising supply as traders increasingly shun Russian crude. West Texas Intermediate dropped to settle down above $107 after touching $116, the highest since 2008, on Thursday. Brent nearly reached $120 before pulling back. Oil swung through a $10 range during the session as most major oil companies continue to implement a de facto ban against Russian crude. The rally cooled after reports surfaced suggesting Iran may be close to signing an agreement. U.S. and European officials have also said a deal is close, but there are still sticking points. Crude markets have experienced an extraordinary run of volatility since Russia's invasion of Ukraine unleashed further uncertainty into global oil markets. J.P. Morgan & Company said Brent could skyrocket to as high as $185 by the end of this year if current conditions continue. Buyers have steered clear of doing business with Russia as the U.S. and others seek to isolate Russia from financial markets. Traders are offering Russia's flagship crude at a record discount in an attempt to attract buyers. The market is selling off due to hopes of Iran deal coming in the next few days, along with comments from Germany that they do not want to put an embargo on Russian crude, said Rebecca Babin, senior energy trader at CIBC Private Wealth Management. But the sell-off is fairly shallow because the market is self-sanctioning Russian crude and effectively taking 3 million barrels of crude off the market. If markets had already tightened significantly prior to the invasion after economies rebounded strongly from the pandemic. Surging energy costs have added to inflationary pressures on the global economy, boosting the prices of everything from gasoline at the pump to diesel used by industrial consumers. The International Energy Agency has warned that global energy security is under threat, while a planned emergency release of crude reserves by the U.S. and its allies has done little to quell market fears. U.S. lawmaker support for an outright ban of oil and gas imports is growing, with Democratic House Speaker Nancy Pelosi saying she's all for a bipartisan draft bill to cut off Russian supplies to the U.S. The American Fuel and Petrochemical Manufacturers fully supports the suspension of all future purchases of crude oil and petroleum products from Russia, the trade group said in a letter to legislators. The White House reiterated it's not interested in a Russian oil ban on Thursday. German Economy Minister Robert Habeck is also against the idea of a ban on imports of Russian energy. Despite the market turmoil, the Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries and its allies are sitting on the sidelines. The group stuck with the 400,000-barrel-a-day production increase that was scheduled for April and wrapped up a Wednesday meeting in a record time of just 13 minutes, delegates said. Brent remains in deep backwardization, a bullish structure where prompt barrels are more expensive than later-dated cargoes, indicating nervousness over tightening supply. The benchmark's prompt spread was $3.11 a barrel and has touched record levels in recent days. China's methane emissions dwarf U.S. and Russia, by Aaron Clark, Bloomberg. China's coal operations spewed so much methane last year that it had the same global warming impact as all the carbon dioxide emissions from international shipping. The nation's energy sector, the world's largest coal producer, accounted for roughly a fifth of total global methane emissions from oil, gas, coal, and biomass. It generated over 50% more than the next largest emitters, Russia and the U.S. The estimates, which are the latest from the International Energy Agency's methane tracker, show the enormity of China's task in mitigating its methane pollution. China has encouraged miners to utilize more methane produced during the mining process, but there remain major obstacles, said Nanan Ku, an analyst with Bloomberg NEF in Beijing. Capturing the gas requires a lot of capital investment, and most mines aren't near major gas transmission pipelines. Different entities are often responsible for extracting coal, and any methane produced, making efforts to curb emissions more complicated, he added. China's National Energy Administration and its Ministry of Ecology and Environment didn't answer questions sent by facts seeking comment. The report, released last week, also highlighted the gap between methane releases detected by satellite and emissions reported by the nations to the United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change. Many countries compile that data by essentially adding up numbers on an Excel sheet. A nation might look at its energy system and, for example, count the total number of compressor stations, then multiply that by generic methane release rates for the amount of fuel processed through them. But that approach can fail to reflect the scale of methane emissions observed by satellite and aerial surveys. In many cases, countries don't base their inventories on measured data, said Christophe McLeod, head of the Energy Supply Unit at the International Energy Agency. As more and more measurement campaigns are being carried out, we are seeing that there is this growing discrepancy. The IEA said global methane emissions from the energy sector exceeded the sum of nationally reported inventories by about 70%. Atmospheric methane increased by a record amount last year to 1,876 parts per billion, according to the European Union's Copernicus Climate Change Service, helping push global temperatures in 2021 to the fifth highest ever recorded. Satellite observations of giant methane leaks are starting to push authorities to update emissions reporting requirements to include more accurate measuring technologies, according to McGlade. One of the major insights from satellite data is that super emission events can make a big difference to total national inventories. Although these events can be infrequent and sometimes only last a few hours, oil and gas ultra-emitters account for as much as 12% of global methane emissions from the sector, according to a study published in Science last month. The French and American scientists who authored the study used satellite observations to identify more than 1,800 major releases of the gas, some of which spread for hundreds of kilometers. Another factor that has driven the widening divide between satellite-detected and reported emissions is that inventories submitted by many countries, including major fossil fuel producers like Iraq and Nigeria, haven't been updated in years. The UNFCCC didn't respond to an emailed request for comment. Global energy producers spewed 135 million metric tons of methane last year, a 5% increase from 2020, according to the IEA's annual assessment, which included country-level estimates for emissions from coal for the first time. That was higher than the global increase in carbon dioxide emissions, which rose 4.3% in 2021. Much existing research has focused on cutting methane emissions from oil and gas because it's viewed as the easiest and cheapest solution. Methane from coal has escaped some of that same scrutiny because production of the fossil fuel needs to be dramatically reduced to meet climate goals anyway. But taking into account methane from coal plants, a dramatically different picture of global emissions. It caused China to become the number one emitter in the IEA's latest update, from sixth place in its 2021 report, when emissions were estimated from oil and gas, but didn't include the dirtiest fossil fuel. China has declined to join an international effort to curb methane led by the U.S. and EU, but has said it's working on a plan to contain emissions. The country's coal sector offers Beijing the biggest opportunity to cut its methane emissions, according to an analysis from the United Nations. OPEC Plus and Consumer Rift Widens by Grant Smith, Bloomberg. As the OPEC Plus coalition tries to ignore an oil shock unleashed by one of its leading members, relations with consumers are deteriorating. The 23-nation group, led by Saudi Arabia, faced a yawning gap in supplies when it gathered on Wednesday as the market shunned supplies from member nation Russia. The International Energy Agency had already tried to calm the rally by deploying emergency stockpiles to little avail. Yet Riyadh and its members offered nothing new to slow oil's surge toward $120 a barrel, wrapping up their meeting in just 13 minutes. On Thursday, the head of the IEA, which represents the U.S. and other major economies, offered a terse and critical response. In a word, it was disappointing, IEA Executive Director Faith Birrell said in a call with reporters. I think we'll leave it at that. The cordial rapport between the Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries, its allies, and Western governments during the pandemic, when the group rescued the global oil industry by slashing production, was already fraying. This is from the Ukraine-Russia war page. Europe scrambles to reduce its need for Russian energy by David McHugh, AP business writer, Frankfurt, Germany. Europe is scrambling to reduce its dependence on Russia for energy and bracing for potential disruption to critical natural gas supplies as Russia's war in Ukraine sends prices to new highs. Natural gas prices hit a record Thursday for a second day in a row as restrictions on oil and gas were increasingly treated as a possibility on the eighth day of the war, whether through Western sanctions or Russian retaliation. That could mean even more pain to people's wallets. Energy prices have been high for months because of low supplies, driving up the cost of everything from utility bills to groceries as businesses pass along their costs to consumers. Traders were factoring in the rising probability of sanctions on gas for each day the offensive continues, said Kanshal Ramesh, senior analyst at Riyadh Energy. The price of gas is 10 times what it was at the start of 2021, but it continues to flow through the major pipelines from Russia to Europe, including those through Ukraine, pipeline companies say. To prepare for any cutoffs as the war intensifies and to reduce Russian reliance, countries are rounding up new supplies of liquefied natural gas, LNG, by ship. They're also speeding up plans for gas import terminals and pipelines that don't depend on Russia, and talking about allowing coal-fired power plants to keep spewing climate-changing emissions for longer if it means energy independence. Yet many of the measures will take months, or in the case of new pipelines and terminals, years. The long-term answer is rapidly building out renewable sources such as wind and solar. But for now, Europe is reliant on gas to heat homes, generate electricity, and supply industries like fertilizer producers. Europe, which gets about 40% of its gas from Russia, is in a different situation than the U.S., which produces its own natural gas. Still, EU Energy Commissioner Kadri Simson says Europe has the tools to handle any Russian retaliation this winter, while conceding a total cutoff would, of course, still be a challenge. Germany is spending 1.5 billion euros, $1.66 billion, to buy more LNG. Chancellor Olaf Scholz on Sunday proposed building two LNG import terminals days after blocking the already completed Nord Stream 2 gas pipeline from Russia to Europe. European Union countries are working on setting up a strategic gas reserve and establishing storage requirements. Officials are urging countries to sign agreements to share gas in emergencies. The EU's Executive Commission is set to unveil steps next week that governments can take. The Paris-based International Energy Agency said Thursday that Russian gas imports could be cut by one-third this year through steps including letting existing gas contracts with Russia expire, finding new supplies from partners such as Norway and Azerbaijan, imposing minimum storage requirements, maximizing use of remaining nuclear plants, and offering cash support for vulnerable electricity customers. Denmark has given the go-ahead for construction of a pipeline to bring Norwegian gas, another major source for Europe, to Poland after permission was suspended last year. "We are really busy catching up with the lost months," Søren Juel Larsen, chief project manager at Energinet. "We have agreed with our contractors that they will deploy more machines and people for the task so we can set the pace and be finished as soon as possible." Energinet plans for the Baltic Pipe to partially launch October 1st and be fully operational January 1st, with capacity of up to 10 billion cubic meters of gas a year. Weaning Europe completely off Russian gas by next winter's heating season, if that becomes necessary, would be possible but painful, involving extra costs and possibly forced conservation, according to analysts at the Bruegel Research Institute in Brussels. Given record LNG shipments are already coming from places like the U.S., a total loss of Russian gas would leave Europe 10 to 15% short and facing potentially painful steps to reduce gas use, which would hit businesses first. If the EU is forced or willing to bear the cost, it should be possible to replace Russian gas already for next winter without economic activity being devastated, people freezing, or electricity supply being disrupted, they said. So far, wide-ranging Western sanctions have spared gas and oil even as they targeted Russian banks and their ability to interact with Western financial systems. Specific exemptions were included for energy transactions. Officials say they're trying to avoid hurting their own economies and consumers as they inflict pain in Russia. But sanctions are already indirectly hitting oil from Russia, the world's number three oil producer that sells 25% of Europe's supply. Some oil buyers in recent days have shunned Russian crude, fearing that if sanctions were applied to Russian energy, their purchased oil could be rendered unusable. Cargoes have already been rejected by European refiners in the market because people are afraid sanctions might be coming and so they don't want to be caught with some cargo they can't resell, said Amy Myers Jaffe, research professor and managing director of the Climate Policy Lab at Tufts University. And now here are a couple of articles from Thursday's Business and Oil page from the Midland Reporter Telegram. OPEC Plus could face a reckoning on Russia, by Salma L. Wardenay and Grant Smith, Bloomberg. OPEC Plus is doing its best to ignore the war started by one of its leading members, but it may not be able to manage it for much longer. Russia's invasion of Ukraine, oil's surge above $110 a barrel, and the resulting mayhem in financial markets barely figured in the cartel's meeting on Wednesday. The group ratified the 400,000-barrel-a-day production increase that was scheduled for April and wrapped up in a record time of just 13 minutes, delegates said. Mexican Energy Minister Rocio Nahle tried to raise the subject of Russia, but other members of the 23-nation coalition, led by Saudi Arabia, swiftly moved on to other matters without any discussion, delegates said, asking not to be named because the meeting was private. Mexico's energy ministry did not respond to a request for comment. The group believes the current prices are driven by geopolitics and not fundamentals, said UBS Group AG analyst Giovanni Stoyanovo. But if Russian exports and production are lower at the next meeting, things might be different. Russia's invasion of Ukraine has triggered one of the strongest packages of economic sanctions ever imposed on a major economy, but none of them target energy exports. That's why OPEC Plus, which only considers the fundamentals of supply and demand at its meetings and not geopolitics, saw no need to discuss the situation, said a delegate. But there are growing signs that traders and ship owners are shying away from handling the country's oil, even without sanctions. A cargo of Russia's Urals crude was offered for sale at a record discount on Tuesday, but found no bidders. About 70% of the country's exports are currently frozen due to the risk of further sanctions or reputational damage, according to London-based consultant Energy Aspects Limited. If this situation were to continue until the next meeting of the Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries and its allies on March 31st, it could place Saudi Arabia and its Gulf neighbors in a tough position. On the one hand, they want to preserve the five-year alliance with Moscow, which is the heart of OPEC Plus coalition. The relationship has had its ups and downs, notably a brief but destructive price war 2 years ago. But it has kept its unity and is credited for saving the oil markets from the pandemic-induced slump. But the pressure from the U.S., a Saudi ally of even longer standing, and other consumers to raise production faster could become too strong to ignore. Exxon begins Russia exit, CEO says, by Kevin Crowley and Joe Carroll, Bloomberg. ExxonMobil Corporation has begun work to terminate its decades-long relationship with Russia due to international sanctions and the nation's needless destruction in Ukraine, said Chief Executive Officer Darren Woods. The process of ending operations before eventually exiting its stake in the Sakhalin 1 oil development will be complicated and require careful management, Woods said during the company's annual Investor Day event on Wednesday. The asset is placed on Exxon's books at about $4 billion and makes up 1 to 2% of earnings and capital employed. As the operator of Sakhalin 1, we have a significant responsibility to make sure that operation is run safely and the integrity of the environmental performance and operations itself is sound, Woods said. That will be a very thoughtful process working with our co-venturers. Over the longer term, Exxon will develop the steps required to exit its 30% stake in Sakhalin 1, Wood said. The oil giant pledged to make no new investments in Russia as a result of its invasion of Ukraine. Sakhalin 1 was an engineering marvel when Exxon first started pumping barrels from its subarctic fields in 2005, requiring miles-long wells drilled horizontally from the shore to deep beneath the seabed. It produced some 227,000 barrels a day last year and has two icebreakers to maintain exports during the winter when temperatures reach below 40 degrees Celsius. But over time, Russia has become less important within Exxon's global portfolio. Previous rounds of sanctions, dating back to Russian interference with Ukraine in the previous decade, forced Exxon to abandon an exploration partnership with Rosneft PJSC that had formed the cornerstone of former CEO Rex Tillerson's growth plans. The most recent sanctions and export controls make operating in Russia untenable, Wood said. We expect with time the ability to continue to operate and sustain the integrity of those operations will degrade, he said.
Dear Dr. Roach, my brother is 65 years old and was spitting up when eating. He went for an endoscopy yesterday and was diagnosed with grade 3 esophagitis. He's been drinking 5 glasses of wine daily for years. Did this cause his problem? He said he will stop drinking wine and drink some other less acidic alcohol. What is esophagitis and what can he do to get better? GG. Esophagitis is inflammation of the esophagus, which has many possible causes. The most likely cause, just from total numbers, is reflux esophagitis. That is caused by stomach contents and acid going backward from the stomach into the esophagus. The acid causes chemical damage to the esophagus. The fact that your brother has been, quote, spitting up, end quote, that is, having food contents coming all the way back to the mouth, is strong evidence of esophageal reflux. 5 glasses of wine a day is too much for many body systems. He needs to reduce his drinking for his health. I suspect reducing alcohol will help his esophagitis, but it is critical for many other organs, including the liver, brain, bone marrow, and heart. To your good health, Dr. Keith Roach.
Mother doesn't want grandma involved in son's recovery. Dear Abby for Friday. Dear Abby, my son just withdrew from college with a medical leave due to anxiety and depression. My husband and I support him fully and are helping him receive the help he needs. Of course, we are very concerned. The problem is my mother. When I was young and had similar problems, she told me, "It's a sin for someone who has as much going for her as you do to be depressed." This was especially strange since she's not religious. She has been similarly dismissive of my feelings during other bouts of depression. She is generous with money, gifts, cooking, etc., but she cannot understand that being close with someone has more to do with emotional trust than simply time spent together. I don't know how to handle this current situation with my son. She wants to be involved, but I have a strong aversion to her being around because I don't know what she'll say. I need to protect my son and myself, but I know she'll feel hurt if I leave her out. What should I do? Mental health advocate. Dear advocate, your mother's feelings should not be a priority right now. I'm recommending you grandma-proof your son to the extent you can by explaining to him that Nana has some old-fashioned, outdated ideas about depression, an illness that can run in families and appears to run in yours. There are far more effective interventions for him now than were available for you back then. Medications and sometimes talk therapy can put him in a more positive frame of mind, and I'm glad you can help him get the professional help he needs. Dear Abby, for most of my life I felt uncomfortable in my own body. It seemed as though my right arm belonged to someone else. I've decided to have it amputated, and I'm trying to find the best way to tell my family. I'd appreciate any suggestions you might have. Lost for words. Dear Lost, there's a name for those feelings you have had for so long. It's called body integrity, identity disorder. Before trying to explain your desire for amputation to your family, please discuss this with a licensed psychotherapist who may be able to help you determine if you truly want to follow through with your intention. With psychiatric help, you may be able to integrate your alien limb into your body image. Dear Abby, I lost a friend about 2 months ago. During the early morning hour of his death, I was having breakfast alone and I had the light on in my dining room. All of a sudden, the light went out and then came back on. Abby, the only power that went out was the light over my head. I am a science person. I do not believe in mystical things. Now I am not so sure my friend wasn't communicating with me. I cried. What do you think? Missing him in California. I think if it comforts you to believe your friend was reaching out to you as he passed to the next realm, you should hold on to and treasure that thought. If it doesn't do that, let it go and dwell on the wonderful friendship you two shared.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.